VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And thank you for joining us on Crosstalk today here on VCY America. Ladies and gentlemen, it's not only a new day in Washington, D.C., but also a new day for illegal aliens in or coming to the United States. One of the first acts under the tenure of President Joe Biden was to suspend investigations, arrests, and deportations of most criminal aliens in the next, for the next 100 days. In essence, our whole country is now a sanctuary country, not only for criminal aliens, but for those who are here in defiance of our own laws. In addition, the Biden administration has ordered the Census Bureau to include illegal aliens in apportionment. Incidentally, did you know that the Border Security Director in President Biden's White House is coming from the United Nations? Join us today as we discuss immigration issues. We welcome back Mark Krikorian. Mark is a nationally recognized expert on immigration issues, serving as executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies. They are an independent, nonpartisan research organization that examines and critiques the impact of immigration on the United States. He has testified numerous times before Congress, has published articles and on many outlets. Mark, thank you for joining us today here on Crosstalk.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Well, it did not take long for the Biden administration to upend protections that President Trump had put in place to protect our nation's borders. Multiple actions taken in the very first hours and days by the Biden administration. What has changed, Mark?
Well, a whole lot of stuff. I mean, basically, Biden said that he was going to undo everything Trump did on immigration. He hasn't quite gotten that far, and there are some things that he's going to almost certainly keep in place because undoing them would be a disaster for him. But like you said, the most attention-getting thing is that he has prohibited virtually all deportations for 100 days until they, you know, come up with a sort of new yardsticks to deport people. But he has said specifically that even after that 100-day period, that no illegal immigrant should be deported, just as a matter of principle, unless he is convicted of a violent crime. That's the radical approach to this issue. It's not something most of the people, frankly, who voted for Biden for president thought they were voting for. He is lifted the travel ban on a variety of countries. They called it the Muslim ban, even though it wasn't a Muslim ban. And the reason for that ban, though, was that there's no way to know who the people are from those countries applying for visas. There's no way to do background checks. And so until it was possible to check their backgrounds, President Trump said, you know, they can't come here. Well, Biden just got rid of that, too. And he introduced a big amnesty bill as well that, again, is a radical departure, even from the amnesty bills of a few years ago, which at least promised that they would enforce the law in the future after the amnesty happened.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not believable, but at least they said it. Biden's bill doesn't even pretend that they'll enforce the law in the future after an amnesty happens.
We're going to circle back on these, and we got other issues we'll incorporate in that, too. But let's talk about this 100-day moratorium. I heard an audio clip of a Honduran migrant, part of this caravan, but he responded. He was asked this question from a reporter, you know, about, what are you doing, where are you going, et cetera. And here's the response that came from the Honduran migrant. He said, "I'm here today because I'm coming to get to the U.S., What I want for my people, I just want patience and pass to the U.S. because they have a new president. President Biden is going to help all of us. He's giving us 100 days to get to the U.S. and give us paper so we can get a better life for our kids and our family." Is that the perception that's out there?
Yes, it is a perception. It's not even, I mean, even Biden wasn't doing that. In other words, it's not true. The guy is mistaken, but, you know, you can't expect prospective illegal immigrants. These are, I mean, you know, they're not stupid, but they're not plugged into, you know, American media and politics.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they've heard something about 100 days and there's no deportations. And so that's how it translated into this guy's perception.
Yeah.
And it's perfectly understandable, quite frankly. This is the kind of thing we've heard from a number of different places, that migrants have gotten the message that Biden is not going to be Trump, and means that they're going to be able to get across the border and be let go. And so the caravan that was coming out of Honduras last week, it was broken up in Guatemala because the police there, you know, weren't going to put up with it. But it was thousands of people. They were even attacking the Guatemalan police. It was serious. These kind of movements are essentially sparked by the Biden administration's rhetoric on immigration, because if these people do get to the border and step foot across and say the magic words about political asylum that their smugglers have poached them to say, the Biden people have said they will not throw them out and they will not detain them. They will just let them go, you know, until their asylum hearing comes up, which could be who knows when. Months, years in the future. In other words, they're going to let them go and they're going to be home free. These people in Central America and elsewhere, they get it. They understand the message and they're taking Biden up on his offer. And he doesn't want it in the sense that he's afraid of a border crisis developing as soon as he takes office. But he's invited it. You know, you make your bed, you sleep in it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and again, it's as long as you can teach that one English word, asylum, they know what word to say when they cross the border. And now, Mark, President Trump, he had ordered those seeking asylum to stay in Mexico, remain in Mexico while matters were being processed. Is that still the rule?
Nope. It was remain in Mexico was like the shorthand name for the program. And what it was is, if you were a Central American who illegally came and claimed asylum, or you walked up to a port of entry, legal crossing point, and claimed asylum, it took your info, you got put in the queue, and then you had to go back to Mexico to wait there. And that was taking away most of the reason people wanted to do this, because most of these asylum claims are just basically a kind of gambit to get past the Border Patrol to be released into the U.S. When you couldn't do that anymore, it wasn't as appealing, and the border crisis stopped before the whole COVID thing happened. And that's because Trump really did get Mexico to agree to take those people back temporarily. Mexico didn't have to do that. And I didn't think they'd agree. But, you know, with the combination of carrot and stick, he got them to agree. Well, President Biden has said, no, we're discontinuing that. No new people will be put into remain in Mexico. And the ones who are there, they're still trying to figure out how to let all of them in without it being too obvious and, you know, looking bad on the news. Because that's really what it amounts to. They don't necessarily want to keep anybody out. They just want to make sure it doesn't cause them political blowback when they let them in. Which is one reason, this isn't a tangent, but this is another aspect of this. They have talked about restarting a so-called refugee program from Central America so that people would be let in as refugees, so-called, without actually being on, you know, on TV sneaking across the border. They'll be flown into the country.
Wow.
And they're going to revive and expand that. It's called the Central American Minors Program, minor meaning, you know, underage. But it was expanded to include adults. And they're going to restart it. And the whole point of that is let in Central Americans in such a way that nobody sees it. They fly them to small airports, middle of the night. I don't mean secret skullduggery. I mean just ways of keeping it out of the news.
Right, right.
And that's their goal.
So to airports across the country?
Presumably, yeah. I mean, the way refugees are brought in. So, yeah. Wherever they're going to be resettled, they would be taken to an airport near there. And, so yes, anywhere. And the point is, it wouldn't be crowds of people on the evening news you know, storming a bridge, as some Cuban asylum seekers did a couple weeks back in El Paso. They tried to get into El Paso. They were kept out. There's hundreds of them. That's bad optics, as they say. In other words, it doesn't look good politically for the administration. So they're going to look for ways of bringing these Central Americans here without it being too obvious.
Mark Krikorian is with us here today from Center for Immigration Studies. Their website, cis.org. That's cis.org. Compare, if you would. I know you've been doing this a long time, Mark. Compare the restrictions on immigration enforcement that have been put in place by President Biden compared to what they were under President Obama. Are there more restrictions now on agents than there were before?
Oh yeah, it's still unfolding. They haven't even been there a week yet, the administration, but by every indication, we are going to pine for the good old days of the Obama administration as far as immigration enforcement goes.
Wow.
Biden basically spent much of the campaign apologizing for how strict supposedly Obama was in immigration enforcement and pledging that he would never make that mistake again. And, you know, ICE people I have several people who are routinely in contact with ICE field agents and supervisors. And they said, you know, the memo that's come out from headquarters basically tells them you're not to arrest anybody. And, you know, no arrest, no immigration arrest, no deportation.
What is their role?
What is their job? What are they going to do now? It's a good question. I mean, presumably the, you know, people who are found to be involved in terrorism or convicted of, you know, violent crimes who then finish their state prison sentences, those people they'll deport. But, you know, that's a relatively small share of people. And what the message that sends is that if you're a regular illegal alien, just somebody who's working construction or washing dishes, whatever it is, you're not a rapist, you're not a murderer. Most illegal aliens are just regular working stiffs like everybody else. But they're not supposed to be here. What the Biden administration basically is saying is that if you are here, that's okay, because we're not even going to look for you. And if you come in with a visa legally, but then just never leave, which is about half of new illegal immigration, we're also not going to look for you. So, you know, we're in for 4 interesting years, I think, on immigration.
I mean, truly, when people use the term open borders, I mean, that's really what this is, open borders, isn't it?
Yeah, basically it is. You know, the people will object and say, well, you know, we still have the Border Patrol there. It's not really open borders. Okay. But what it is unlimited immigration. Because there's all kinds of rules in the immigration law and limits, this many in this category, whatever, that sort of thing. It's too complicated, but that's the point of it, is to limit the number of people moving to the United States. If you can just come here and overstay, then those numbers, those caps, are meaningless. That's unlimited immigration.
Mark Krikorian, our guest here today on Crosstalk. A quick 60-second break. We'll be back with more information here. But, folks, it's unbelievable where your immigration and customs enforcement agents are forbidden to make arrests. They can't make arrests. More to come here in 1 minute. This is Crosstalk.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, geologist and president of the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, how fast did the animals migrate away from Ararat after Noah's flood?
Chris, the Bible tells us that after the flood, God commanded the animals to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. And that they did, migrating to fill the earth. There are some modern-day examples of rapid animal spreadings, several coming from the island continent of Australia, which until recently had no mammals. Now rabbits are nearly epidemic. Another example would be a particular kind of toad that was introduced in Australia back in the 1930s, and then just 10 years later was observed over 1,000 miles away. Surely the biblical concept of migration to fill the earth is not only possible, but quite plausible. Besides that, it's true, because we're told about it back in Genesis.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
friends, whether you understand it or not, here's in very simplest terms. The Biden administration has, in essence, turned the United States into a sanctuary nation. A sanctuary nation. Unbelievable matters that are going on. But I guess, friends, we were told this should come as no surprise because we were told this was the position of Joe Biden as he ran for president. And I know this has caused great angst as well. So some of the border states here pertaining to it. Let's talk about that border wall. There's implications with the Biden administration with that, too, Mark.
Oh, of course there are. I mean, Biden, when he was running, said the wall is terrible, it's evil, it's racist. I don't know how a wall can be racist. It's just a thing. But
And I'm going to pause you there 1 second, because wasn't it a wall or barricade that had been put up just all throughout Washington, D.C. For this inauguration? I mean, do not cross this barricade, do not cross this wall. I mean, they saw the importance of walls for security.
Literally outside my office, my building, there were 10-foot high, a metal fence wall type things. Not anymore, but there were. And mm-hmm. So, yeah, of course, the irony is ridiculous. But Biden said all along that he was going to stop construction on the wall, and that's what they did. They may end up actually having to pay contractors to not build the wall because the contracts have already been signed, and there may be kill fees in there that if you're not going to, do X, Y, and Z, that you, the federal government, have to pay us anyway, that sort of thing. So yeah. It actually was going to cost us money. We're going to be paid. It's like paying farmers not to grow food. The Biden administration is going to be forced to pay some construction people not to build the wall. The only good side, and it's not good, it's just it's less bad, is that the ACLU has demanded that the Biden administration actually tear down the wall.
Oh, my.
And Biden not being, he may not have all his faculties, but he's not that stupid anymore. And they know that that would just be a gift to Republicans. All they need is one 60-second video clip of wall being demolished.
Yeah.
And the Democrats can kiss Congress goodbye.
Yeah.
So, That at least the stuff that's there is going to stay, but no more wall is going to be built under this administration.
It's interesting, too. We talk about, we're going to build roads and bridges, this infrastructure, put people back to work. Well, this was sure a job-killing measure then as well to stop the construction of the wall.
Yeah, well, like the Keystone Pipeline.
Yes.
I mean, that's not my area of expertise, but the unions are up in arms because thousands of jobs have been lost, people are going to lose their jobs because of that. And it's a similar thing, it's not quite as big a scale, but it's a similar thing with the wall construction.
Is it true, Mark, that the Biden administration is not using the term alien, but instead using the term non-citizen?
Yeah, and in fact, that's in the legislation they introduced, and they're already doing that now, but they want to change it in the law, too, where alien, which is the word for centuries, our laws always used for somebody who's not a U.S. citizen or a U.S. national. A national is a category that where you're protected by American law, but you're not a U.S. citizen. And actually, the people of American Samoa are not citizens, but they're not national. But they're nationals. They're not aliens either. So, I mean, that's a technical point. But yes, they want to replace the perfectly functional word of alien with non-citizen, and they're going to try to do that in the law. I mean, in a sense, I don't care that much about that. If they actually were interested in American sovereignty and enforcing the law, I don't mm-hmm. care if they call them bananas. You know what I mean? The question is, what are they doing? And unfortunately, their obsession with changing words does suggest or confirms their distaste for having anything to do with immigration law at all. Their perspective really is, I mean, let's be honest, anyone in the world who wants to move here has the right to move here.
Yeah.
And we don't really have the right to stop them. They'll object when you say that. It's like, okay, well, then what are you willing to do to stop people from coming in? And if they do get in, what are you willing to do to throw them out? And the answer is nothing. So if you're not willing to enforce the law, then you, like you said earlier, you basically are for open borders.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's also talk about DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, because there's been some change in its approach as well.
Yeah, DACA was something that Obama illegally decreed in 2012, and it didn't apply to kids. These were people who came as kids, and they're all adults now at this point. There's something like 700,000, I think, under the program now. They're in the 30s, most of them. And they basically, what you get is a work permit. That's the whole point of it. The work permit, social security number, and a driver's license. So it's kind of a amnesty light, like a semi-amnesty. So you don't get a green card. You can't vote or any of that stuff. But you get all the stuff that you need for ordinary day-to-day life, which really is, like I said, a work permit, social security number, and a driver's license. That Trump was kind of reluctant to end, even though he said he was going to end it on day one. About 9 months into his administration, he finally issued a ruling to end it, which should have been the end of that because it wasn't an executive order. It wasn't a law. It was just a memo from, you know, an earlier DHS director. Well, it got held up in court. The, you know, our judiciary basically is a kind of resistance judiciary that no longer cares about what the actual law says. So they managed to run out the clock on Trump. So DACA is still in force. And what Biden did was he issued an executive order basically saying, you know, it's still in force and instructing Homeland Security and the Attorney General to find ways of, you know, propping it up or fortifying it is the word he used, which has no meaning in law. It's just a political measure. But, yeah, those people, the DACA people, are not going anywhere. And honestly, I mean, there's a case to make for legalizing people who really came as infants and toddlers and have grown up here. I think most people kind of get that. But you can't do that unless you're fixing the problem that made it possible
right
for kids to come here at 6 months old and then live here for the rest of their lives.
You got to turn off the faucet.
And turn off the faucet, basically, before you mop up. And there's no indication that they have any interest in any of that. And the selling point of DACA was these kids were not legally responsible. They were kids. They didn't make the decision to illegally sneak in the country. And okay, there's something to that too. But now the Democrats are insisting that the parents also get amnesty. But the parents didn't know what they were doing. Why would they get rewarded for their illegal activity?
Mark Krikorian with us today, Center for Immigration Studies. Again, their site, and folks, they've got a lot of information. They're right there, especially within the last 2 weeks. I mean, a lot of information you're going to find at cis.org, cis.org. You referred to in your opening comments here, too, Mark, in regard to the, quote, ban, doing away with the Muslim ban. And this is a term that's been used by the media. It's been used by activist group. We know it was just propaganda terminology in that regard. But we know that there was nothing designated banning people by religious belief into our U.S. We know people from other Muslim nations did have access to come into the U.S., but this is people coming from rogue nations where there could not be proper screening to take place. I mean, it was not a Muslim ban as true to those words, you know, what they would sound like, but they indeed kept bad players from entering our country.
Yeah, and that was the whole point. And, you know, it kept some non-bad players, too, from coming in. We just had no way of telling who was who. That was the reason. The point is that the countries that were covered by this ban were either countries that didn't have any government to speak of or hostile countries that would not cooperate with us in helping us do the kind of basic background checks you need to do before you give people visas. An example of the first one, Somalia. There's no Department of Motor Vehicles in Somalia to find out, you know, check somebody's credit record or whatever. In fact, it's been something like 30 years since Somalia has even issued birth certificates.
Wow.
So, you know, what would a background check even mean for Somalia? There's nothing you can check. All you got to do is ask the guy, are you a terrorist? He's going to say no. Okay, well, that's about all I can tell you. And then the other category are countries that were not cooperating with us. They may have had, you know, functioning, semi-functioning at least, systems of information, records, that kind of thing, but weren't cooperating with us. And a couple of the countries, I forget which one specifically now, I think Chad may have been on there in Africa, got off the list because they said, okay, well, they talked to our people and they said, what do we need to do to get off this list? And so we said, well, you know, you need to do this and that, and your, you know, National Police Bureau has to respond to our requests for information, et cetera, et cetera. And they said, okay. And they did it. And once that was certified, they were off the list. So this isn't something, you know, Trump in some racist fever dream dreamed up. This is just normal good governance. And ending this restriction on travel, frankly, is irresponsible on Biden's part. Maybe they want to reassess it, take a look at it. Do these countries all need to be on? Okay, whatever. That's all fine. But just saying, okay, this all disappears, these people come in again, that is not a responsible way to run an immigration.
Yeah, you certainly don't lift it without that evaluation taking place. You hold it in place, make what modifications are necessary, but he's taken just the opposite approach. Let's hit another issue, and actions that have been taken even by the Biden administration as it pertains to the census. Now, the Census Bureau, they were supposed to deliver the report prior to a change in administration. President Trump's position was illegal aliens should not be counted for congressional apportionment. Then all of a sudden, Census Bureau announces, well, we're not going to get our report out in time prior to, you know, the administration change. It'll be after, you know, that takes place after this date. Now we have President Biden on his first day in office also giving an executive order, but now he's mandating that illegal aliens be included in this apportionment. Isn't this just a huge reward for even states that harbored illegal aliens?
Yeah, of course it is. I mean, what Biden basically said is, you know, go back to business as usual. And that's what most of his executive actions say. With regard to the census, you know, everybody is counted. And the overall count, which includes illegal aliens, includes everybody, even foreign students, they're all included when you count up how many people there are in a state in order to decide how many members of the House of Representatives they get. And even within the state legislature also to draw state legislative and state Senate districts. So it matters. I mean, California has several more seats in Congress than it would if illegal immigrants weren't counted. The practical problem, though, is that there really isn't a good way to determine who really is an illegal alien and who isn't, and then remove them from the count. I mean, I think it's an important issue that got aired and discussed, but I'm just not sure as a practical matter there's that many individual people that they would be able to confirm were illegal immigrants and they knew where they lived and then they didn't count them. Because if they had all that information, then, you know, you could just go and arrest them. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It does point to the fact that illegal immigration helps the states and cities that are shielding the illegal immigrants because it increases their political heft in the legislature.
Mark Krikorian is our guest here today on Crosstalk. Folks, we've got a little bit more interview before we open phone lines, and we're going to find out who is the Biden administration seeking to put in charge over border security and Department of Homeland Security. Comments on those issues after the break. You're listening to Crosstalk.
Year after year, generation after generation, we as Americans enjoy the right and opportunity to let our voices be heard through the election of our governing officials. With over 200 years of peaceful transition from one elected body to another, the stability of America's Republic stands alone among nations. Our founders pledged their life, their fortune, and their sacred honor in the establishment of this nation. Our country's founding documents have guided this nation and are the substance by which today's laws are judged. Do you own a copy of the Constitution? Documents of Freedom is a pocket-sized booklet containing the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and all other amendments passed. The booklet also features the Declaration of Independence and Washington's Farewell. Documents of Freedom is available for a donation of $5 or more to VCY America and can be made by calling 1-800-729-9829. That's 1-800-729-9829.
Folks, if you really want to know what's happening at our borders the whole matter of immigration, don't put on your nightly news. No, you can go to CIS.org, Citizens for Immigration Studies. Their director is with us today, Mark Krikorian, and talking about issues that are going on at our borders and our immigration policy. But, Mark, let's talk about the Border Security Director in the Biden administration. Who is this person? And I understand there's some links to the U.N.?
Yeah, exactly. The person on the National Security Council, which is, you know, part of the White House staff, who's going to be dealing with border issues specifically, not all of immigration, but borders, is a literally a UN employee, or at least was until 5 days ago. Worked for the, she was the DC, like, spokesman for the UN High Commissioner for Refugees. Talk about, you know, fox in the hen house. I mean, it's, and I'm not saying the person is bad. I'm sure she's a perfectly nice person. But the idea that we should be drawing our staff in charge of American border security from the United Nations staff is just nuts. The person in charge of all immigration policy in general in the White House is a woman named Esther Olivaria. She's a former Ted Kennedy staffer, so that's all you need to know there. And the person who's going to be, or maybe by now already is, the head of Homeland Security is a guy who was lower down in Homeland Security in the Obama administration. And it's kind of notable for two things. One, he's the one who created this culture of rubber stamping within the what's called USCIS, which is the department that does the green cards and the citizenship and what have you. His point was, you approve it and have to show why you turned it down. I mean, it's ridiculous. But that's the lesser problem. The other one is that this guy, his name is Alejandro Mayorkas, Ali Mayorkas. He was actually intervening on behalf of foreign visa applicants who didn't really qualify but were big donors to the Clinton administration, or Clinton campaign, to Clinton's various cronies and minions. And, I mean, literally, he intervened in order to get approvals for applications, you know, on the part of various wealthy people and companies who should not have been approved. So this is the guy who's going to be the head of Homeland Security.
You know, it is truly amazing. And this first individual, I don't believe we named her, but I think we're talking about
Katie Tobin. Katie Tobin is her name, yes.
And
the UN person.
Yeah, coming from the UN. And the UN was not too complimentary about the Trump administration policy about what took place at our borders.
Yeah, to say the least.
Yeah.
And when she was with the different jobs at the UN in Central America, she was actually involved in trying to get, put together this program I talked about that Obama's people had done, where they flew people directly from Central America, so they didn't even have to show up at the border. She was involved in the UN side of that kind of program. So it pretty much guarantees they're going to try that again. In fact, she may be overseeing that program. This is the one where they're flying people directly here so that there's no news coverage of it.
Well, one other aspect, and it's a health aspect. Of course, we know the impact of COVID taking place around the world. Are there precautions taking place at our borders in regard to this? What about vaccinations for this or other related issues? What do we know about that aspect as we concerned even about the health of a nation?
Well, I mean, you know, it's not like they're doing nothing at the border, but it's not nearly adequate because what we're seeing is that border hospitals are getting hammered by people from Mexico with COVID. They're usually not illegal immigrants. They're usually legal immigrants who are using the loophole in the border closure, because there's supposedly the border with Canada and Mexico is closed. But if you're coming to seek medical treatment, that's an exception.
Oh boy.
So there's all kinds of people who have border crossing cards in northern Mexico. It's like a short-term visa. You come to shop at Walmart and then go home. Well, they're using those cards to come across and go straight to the hospital. In El Paso, they've had to, you know, they've been using that. Sometimes their all their ambulances are tied up because they're at the port of entry picking up people and taking them to hospitals. So, you know, we are doing some things at the border to try to limit the spread of COVID, but not, we haven't been nearly stringent enough, quite frankly.
The acting Homeland Security Secretary Chad Wolf recently warned of an immigration and border security crisis. Do you echo those concerns?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is separate from the COVID thing. But, yeah, there's no question that the reason the border crisis that had developed a couple of years ago and really was spinning out of control was, you know, various loopholes in our law that the Trump people, they didn't really fully close them, but they kind of patched them with executive actions and agreements. Biden's undone that. So if there's a patch on your boat to stop a leak, and then you rip the patch out, what do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, yeah.
Of course there's going to be a border crisis. Now, it's not going to happen tomorrow because the Biden people have kept in place, for instance, a public health measure at the border where you basically aren't even allowed to apply for asylum. They just turn you around and push you back into Mexico. They may, I mean, they've kept that in place for now. They may end up having to lift that just because of pressure from their own left wing.
Mm-hmm.
But my point in that is that you're not going to see a disaster at our border tomorrow. It's going to be there, but it could be a few weeks or a few months before you see it. One of the important reasons is that Mexico has been cooperating, at least under Trump, was cooperating in bottling people up in Mexico's own southern border. I don't, you know, how long are they going to keep that up without Trump's, you know, threats of trade retaliation, that sort of thing? That's what got him to do it. I don't see Biden having the spine or the stomach to keep those kind of threats in place.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're going to see is it's going to start eroding, and you're going to see a disaster at the border, but it's not going to happen this week.
So where do we go from here, Mark? I mean, people hear these things. They say this is outlandish. It's outrageous what's going on already within the first few days. How can people get engaged?
Well, one thing they can do is get informed by coming to our site, cis.org. And if they're interested in Twitter and they like snark and sarcasm, they could follow me on Twitter, Mark S. as in Stephen Krikorian. For citizen action, you were a think tank, but for citizen action, like, you know, writing, calling your congressman, that kind of stuff, the best group is called numbersusa.com. NumbersUSA, all together in one word, .com. It's the biggest citizen action group on immigration. They stopped George W. Bush's immigration push back 15 years ago now, less than that. They helped stop the Gang of Eight bill more recently in 2013-14. They have more Facebook followers than the NRA, so they are probably the most important political group in D.C. you've never heard of. And they are an outstanding group. I suggest you go and sign up. You don't have to pay. You don't have to give money if you don't want to. But after you, you know, check out our website every day for information, that's the place to go for action.
CIS.org and then numbersusa.com. Let's open some phone lines here today on Crosstalk. Our number, 800-733-9829, 800-733-9829. And ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question or a brief comment, pick up your phone, give us a call here today on Crosstalk. Perhaps Mark revealed something you didn't know before, or have a comment as to how things have turned within just days of a new administration. Some of the matters took place within hours of a new administration. Again, our number to Crosstalk is 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. If this is not held in check, it's certainly very troubling as to the implications across this nation. And, Mark, another whole area we didn't really touch on here today, though, is the number of states that are now also giving driver's licenses to illegal aliens, which then also they have the motor voter, you know, registration that happens at the same time. Could we see an even greater influx of illegal voting in this nation than what we've seen in the past?
Yeah, it's entirely possible. Although, you know, to be fair, usually it's by accident. Because motor voter, when you get driver's license, they have to give you voter registration papers, too. The papers say, you know, I attest that I'm a U.S. citizen or something. But, I mean, how many people read that
stuff?
You know,
right.
They figure, well, the government gave me this thing. I guess it's okay.
Yeah.
But, yes, motor voter is a problem. There's not that many non-citizens who are, like, scheming to vote in our elections. We're the ones who are at fault. This is our fault for basically kind of almost tricking people into or deceiving people into thinking it's okay to vote in our elections if you're not a citizen.
Let's go to the phone lines. Wayne is calling from Chattanooga, Tennessee. Wayne, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you very much for taking my call. When Americans work and earn money, it's a trickle-down effect in the economy. I understand when immigrants earn money, they send a large amount of money back to their hometown for family members, and that has a drastic effect on the economy.
Yeah, I mean, the term for that is remittances. They remit the money back home. Yes, in fact, a big share of immigrants come here precisely to earn money to send home. Now, the amount, when you look at the whole size of the American economy, isn't that big. I mean, it's a lot of money, but it's not as big. You know, our economy is huge. But the money is coming from some of the places in our country that are most starved for investment capital and for just spending. In other words, they're coming from poorer places where they actually need the money, and instead of investing the money, say, in saving for their kids' college or to buy a lunch truck or whatever it is, they're sending the money home to grandma. And, you know, they're not doing anything illegal or wrong. It's their money. They get to do whatever they want to with it. But it's not helpful to our economy, and it's not even necessarily helpful to the countries where it's going, because if you're in, you know, Guatemala, you're getting the stream of money into your village from people who left. Well, all the young people want to leave and go get money, too. That doesn't help the development of those countries. So, you know, remittances, it's not like it's morally wrong, but it's not a good policy. And the last thing I'd say on this is that some significant share of people who send money home are actually receiving American welfare, food stamps maybe, or Medicaid. But, and so what they're doing is American taxpayers are subsidizing those remittances.
Wow.
It's outrageous. We've tried to get, like, numbers on that. It's very difficult to get, but we know it's a real thing.
Thank you, Wayne. Let's go to Russell in Salina, Kansas. You're on the air.
Yes, Jim, thanks for taking my call. My comment is about the negative coverage on the border issue. I don't think we have to worry about that. It's too fresh on my mind how they covered China and the Bidens. So if they do, I'm sure they'll cover some, but it'll probably be covered over, and it'll be nice emotional stories. Mm-hmm. That's my comment.
Well, no, that's a good point. And that's a real, there's going to be plenty of that. Sob stories, this person, you know, it's bad in Guatemala, what have you, that sort of thing. There's going to be a lot of that. But we have a lot of alternative media now. Everybody's got a cell phone camera. There's no way you can hide, you know, people trying to storm the border. So while it's a real problem, I'm not that worried about it because you just can't hide things that big.
Thank you, Russell, for the call. We're up against a break. We'll come back to more of your phone calls following it. This is Crosstalk on VCY.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website's worldviewreport.com. Well, today, Monday, January 25th, 2021, kicked off the Great Global Reset Conference of the World Economic Forum. And true to form, they're calling for global governance, digital economy, social credit scores, banks and investment firms to align their portfolios against the free market system and for climate change and radical environmentalism. Well, we also heard at this conference from the UN Secretary General. He used to be the president of the Socialist International Party, so you know what you're going to get there. And the president of the World Economic Forum, well, he used to be in charge of the Sustainable Development Goals for the United Nations, which is, among many things, just international socialism. So, my friends, they needed to move out a president that was opposed to globalism as they bring down America to bring down the other Western worlds for the Great Reset.
This is Crosstalk on BCY America. Our guest today, Mark Krikorian from the Center for Immigration Studies. Again, their website, CIS.org. That stands for Center for Immigration Studies, CIS.org. And also encourage you to check out NumbersUSA.com. That's NumbersUSA.com. Let's go right back to the phone lines. Calling in from Menno, South Dakota. Ralph, you're on the air.
Yeah. My question is, if I understood right, your guest said that illegal immigrants are counted for representation in Congress. Now,
yep.
If that's true, why? How long has that been going on, and why is it even at all? Because illegals are not supposed to be able to vote, so why should they be counted for representation?
Thank you, Ralph.
Yeah, good question. I mean, the Constitution says that everybody in a state is counted, and then you, based on the whole number of persons, as the language says, you decide, you decide how many congressmen they get. And then within the state, that's, they also divide up districts and what have you. The question is, is that supposed to cover people who are, for purposes of representation, should that only count citizens? Or should that count everybody, non-citizens, whether they're legal or illegal or not? The position up to now has been that everybody gets counted, illegal immigrants too. There have been several lawsuits over the past several decades. Each time there's a census, they always get thrown out, usually because of based on what's called standing, where the people trying to sue, the court says you don't have any basis for suing. You have no reason to sue on this. But it's a live issue as to whether this is something that we want to change. That was why it was good Trump issued that order to exclude them. Like I said, though, I think there's a practical problem of how do you know whom to exclude and whom to count if you're only going to count citizens.
Yeah.
It's not that easy.
Well, it's also interesting that we used to have the question, are you a U.S. citizen, on the census,
yep.
And that question was removed.
Was removed altogether. I mean, having the question on there, it seems to me, is perfectly legitimate.
Yeah.
Maybe you could base it on that. But, the Trump administration tried to put the question back on the census.
Back to the
and
courts.
And the court stopped them.
Yep. Thank you, Ralph. A good question. Let's go next to Barry in South Milwaukee, Wisconsin. You're on the air.
God bless, gentlemen. I'd like Mr. Krikorian to comment not only about the illegal immigration across the southern border, but about the massive fentanyl problem going across our southern border. And I'll take your comments off the air.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. Border security is about immigration, but it's not just about immigration. It's about anything or anybody that shouldn't be coming across the border. It's national security, it's drugs, it's whatever. And the drug problem is, become a pretty significant problem. Fentanyl, meth used to all be made here. Now a lot of that's imported. There's an interesting connection, though, between immigration and the drug issue on the border. And it's not that illegal immigrants bring in drugs. Some of them do as a way of paying for their passage, but usually that's marijuana because it's bulky. The interesting thing is that when there's a border crisis, huge numbers of people showing up, like a whole busload of them, of, women and children, they step over the border, they say asylum, and then the Border Patrol has to spend the entire rest of the day processing those people.
Hmm.
What do you think happens elsewhere on the border while they're doing that?
Yeah.
In fact, the cartels often would direct these people, say, okay, we're not going to tax you for crossing our territory, but you have to cross there, and we're going to do our business 5 miles away over here, and the Border Patrol isn't even going to be watching because they're going to be dealing with you.
Wow. Doug, in Pensacola, Florida, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon. I'd like to ask Mark, are you aware of organizations here in the United States who accommodate the illegal traffic, the illegal aliens, getting them placed in certain parts of the country? How do they wind up in Georgia or in Minnesota, these big clusters of illegals?
Sure.
And
mm-hmm.
I just wondered, are there organizations that are placing these people in certain areas?
In some cases, yes, some no. In Georgia, what really drew the illegal immigrants there, or Georgia is now one of the top 10 immigration states, is just work. Because Georgia had a dry, you know, economy. Some of them came for farming, but then lots of people moved to the Atlanta area for construction. So that really didn't require anybody to kind of do anything. That wasn't orchestrated. That was just, that's where the jobs were. But your example of Minnesota was interesting, and it's not just Minnesota, but refugee resettlement is in fact directed by these nonprofit groups and the State Department. And what that does is kind of plant the seeds of future immigration, some of it legal, but also some of it illegal. So the answer is, you know, it's some of both. Some people, some immigrants go places just because that's where the work is. Others go places literally because they have been sent there. It depends on the situation.
And so some will use the argument that, well, they will take jobs that U.S. citizens don't want, so it's a good thing.
Yeah, that's a whole other show, but no, that's baloney because there's no such thing as a job Americans won't do. All the jobs that are immigrant heavy, except for a tiny handful of relatively small occupations, are mostly done by American citizens, whether it's, you know, office cleaning, janitorial, all of that kind of stuff, construction, restaurants. You know, most of those people are those fields are native born Americans. If you have cheap enough labor where, say, in a restaurant or a factory, everybody speaks Spanish and you basically can't function if you don't, well, that changes things. But that's not because Americans can't do the jobs. It's because immigrants kind of were brought in to displace the American workers who used to be there.
Brad West Dallas, you got 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Hey, Brother Jim. I just disagree about one thing that your guest mentioned. He's talking about when they send money home, it's not immoral. Well, you have to differentiate. If they're here illegally, then yes, it is. Everything they do once they're here is illegal from beginning to end.
Mark, your response.
Yeah, okay. I mean, that's a fair point. But the fact is, it is their money, even if they're illegal aliens. They work for it.
Okay.
And that's my only point on that.
Thank you, Brad. We're out of time on the program here today. Much more to discuss, but the clock says otherwise. Give us again the website, Mark.
CIS.org.
Great. And folks, you can stay updated on immigration issues there. Thank you, Mark, for carving out a significant amount of time here to join us and our listeners today.
Well, delighted. I'm glad to have time to talk about the details. Thanks a lot.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.